defending, because no one has to win. Start with the ending, it's the best way to begin.
Of course, that is David Wilcox, and David Wilcox, the American singer-songwriter, was on our show earlier today. Special guest. But that is our intro song to a 9-week series. Next week will be the last week of the 9-week series. This series is with Canadian talk show host, Drew Marshall.
Oh, that guy.
And his woman. So smooth.
You've learned nothing.
Nothing. And relationship guru and psychologist, Dr. Sue Johnson. We tried 28 years of doing marriage our way, but eventually it ended. Dope! However, after a long separation, my wife and I recently renewed our vows on a small deserted island off the coast of Mexico.
Do, 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 do.
Gilligan was the officiant.
Yes.
Now, to make sure that I don't screw it up again, I've asked renowned psychologist and relationship guru, Dr. Sue Johnson, to help me save the rest of our marriage, you know? Help my wife and I just kind of rebuild our love. But this time with foundational building blocks using tools we've never actually had before. So Dr. Johnson unwisely agreed to personally take Bev and I through her Hold Me Tight program. This week is the last conversation with Dr. Sue. It's Hold Me Tight conversation number 7, Keeping Your Love Is Alive. Keeping Your Love Is Alive. Wow. Keeping Your Love Alive. My love is alive. Remember that song?
No.
Are you kidding me?
At least not the way that you're singing it.
Who sings that? I don't know. Let's keep it that way. If you want to sign up for the program yourself, do the same program that Bev and I are doing. You go to drewmarshall.ca and click on the Hold Me Tight thing, all right? The big colorful thing that says Hold Me Tight. If you want to watch all the previous episodes, the actual conversation, see, we're playing you the audio because it's video, duh. But if you want to watch the video, you go to drewmarshall.ca and click on the thing that says watch all the videos, okay? It's pretty simple. You can... Ideally, I think it'd be good for you to pay a shrink to take you through the Hold Me Tight stuff. They need to be emotionally focused therapists. There's another term. I can't remember. What's it called? Attachment theory stuff. They need to be kind of trained up in the Sue Johnson Hold Me Tight thing. But, man, that's a lot of coins. So try this first, okay? Yes, there's a price. Yeah, it might seem a little steep right now, but it's nowhere near as steep as hiring a therapist. So just check it out for yourself. This thing has allowed my wife and I to put some handles on our communication, on our relationship, on understand. Like, look, we still have little scraps. My wife's still a micromanager. Did I say that out loud?
Get that in before she shows up, buddy.
She's going to kick my butt next week. But now we have a way to move forward in these conversations rather than being sucky and silent.
Yeah.
Everyone's done the sucky and silent thing.
Yep.
I'm really good at it.
No,
I can ignore people really, really easily. Right,
yep.
Rachel?
Yep.
Anyway, have a listen from Hold Me Tight Conversation number 7, Keeping Your Love Alive. And then if you want to watch the rest of it, you go or listen to it or whatever, just go to our social media and we'll let you know when it's loaded. Hey everyone, we are back and this is our final conversation with Dr. Sue. Of course, my wife, Bev. Dr. Sue is on the other screen. And before we begin, Dr. Sue, my wife and I want to just raise a glass to you because you, we kind of like you, first of all, and you're British, so we know you drink. But thank you. Thank you. Like, you have spent an enormous amount of time with us, and we are, okay, I'm a goofball. But anyway, thank you is what we're trying to say. Cheers.
You're most welcome. And I've got my tea. So I'm British, so I'm drinking tea. So cheers, cheers.
Cheers.
It's actually been a lot of fun.
When
you first asked me to do it, I thought, but you know, it's been a lot of fun and I've enjoyed it. And I feel like one of the reasons is you guys have been so real and so genuine. And I hope that people are listening to it because I think it's a precious thing when a couple are willing to talk so openly and to sit with me and go through this stuff. I think it could really help a lot of couples. So I hope it's useful for people.
Well, it has been. We've heard from numerous people that they're actually showing it at their small groups as well. Like the people get together and meet and talk about things. And yeah, they're showing the series.
That's great. I love that. I love the idea that little by little, that we are getting the message out that people can intentionally shape their relationships. You know, I love that because there's so much pessimism and despair out there in the world, and there's so much stuff about relationships just are impossible. And even the pessimistic stuff, it's all about, oh, it hits you in the head, you fall in love, you've got to find the right person. It's like it's magic. It's not about, wait a minute, you can do this. You can understand it and you can do it. It's about, it's just magic. So you're lucky. If you find it, you find it. If you don't, then you lose it. We need to tell people that you can understand relationships and you can shape them.
Okay, well, listen, getting into this last chapter, I've only had three sips of wine. The last chapter, there's two things that I need to say first. Number one, par for the course, forgot the stinking book at home again. Number two.
The stinking book. That's very interesting, Drew, okay?
Sorry.
This is a slip, is it? The stinking book. Okay, jolly good. We've got that established, yeah.
Okay. So, and the other thing is, you know, we've had a bit of a break between the last time. Apologies, Bev has a cold too, so she's going to be
fine. Yes.
We've had a bit of a break between the last time we did a session and today. And Bev and I were talking today because that's how we do things. We cram before the exam.
Yes, I get that.
Yeah. Okay, and what we were talking about was, okay, during our break, Sue,
we weren't very intentional.
We didn't pick up your book. Like, it's got dust on it. We did nothing intentional. We had a couple of in-your-face things about stuff, and, you know, we eventually resolved it, and we used the tools you gave us, et cetera. But we weren't super intentional about, like, we have to meet with you every week for the rest of our lives.
Well, guys, it's, you know, taking care of your relationship is like everything else. It waxes and wanes. I know that what happens a lot is that when things are going well, it doesn't seem that important. It's not front and center. Then when things start to go wrong, people pick up the book and they say, what was that conversation about? Yeah, I remember that. What was that about, you know? But hopefully, you know, especially when you talk about your emotions, our experience is that if you have these emotional conversations, your brain codes them as so important that somewhere you hold on to them and they're still influencing you, even if you're not doing the exercises. I'm not saying you shouldn't do the exercises. I think, you know, I'm trying to tell people to take care of their relationship because it's so precious. But as I say that, I'm aware that the pace of life has increased, that we all cram so many things into a day, it's pretty hard. You know, I mean, lots of people they've got jobs, they're parents, they're trying to take care of their health. You know, it's like, you're kidding. You know, I need to try and remember how to talk to my kid, let alone these skills with my partner. But it's all part of realizing how important your relationship is and making time. You know, and part of what's the thing today is creating rituals. You know, when I talk about creating rituals of connection, I think people think I mean huge, you know, huge, elaborate events. And I don't at all. When I think about couples over the years, most of the rituals that people create are small. They don't take much time. You know, like my favorite is a couple who'd been through all shades of hell, mostly because they both got addicted at various times and they both had terrible childhoods. It was kind of a miracle that they'd actually trusted each other and found each other. But one of the things that they talked about in their hold me tight conversations was that as things improved in their relationship, he naturally went back he didn't even think about it. He just started doing it to a very simple thing that had meant so much to her at the beginning of the relationship, which was he'd bring her tea in bed in the morning. And he still did that even when the relationship was bad, but it would be like, here's your tea, bong, right? Like, right? Yeah, it's like, it's an empty, here's your tea. Right? But what he started to do, which when she spoke about it and reminded him that he was doing this, he said, oh yeah, I guess I have started to do that again, was when their relationship improved, he would bring her tea, he would touch her on the shoulder, and he would lean down. And when she did it, she did this. He would lean down and he would kiss her very slowly, right here in the middle of her forehead, right? And it would be a slow kiss. And then he'd say, there's your tea, sweetie, right? Or here's your tea. And it was no big deal. I mean, it was a few seconds and a bit more emotion and affection put into something he did anyway. But for her,
huge.
It was huge. And she was doing this and she was telling, it was for her, because she said, when we were first together and I would wake up in the morning and I would think about the risks I was taking with this man emotionally, and I would start to freak before I'd even open my eyes. She said, and then he'd come into the room and he'd put tea down, which was a caring thing to do. But then he'd come down and he'd kiss me right here. And my brain would say, it's okay. It's okay. He loves you. We'll be okay. And so for him to start doing that again, so she told him about it in this conversation. And he said, you're right. I've started doing that again. You're right. I like doing that. And I'm so glad you're telling me that it really matters to you, because, you know, I just started doing it. So little things like this, you know, things like calling your partner up and calling them by a special name, you know, it's...
Or turning your cell phone off.
Or turning your cell phone off, yes. But, you know, we have all kinds of little ways of showing the people we love that we're thinking of them and they matter. And just realizing what they are and doing them more deliberately. That's what I'm talking about in creating rituals that keep this good feeling going in your relationship, which is a key part of this conversation that we're having now.
Right. Okay. And the chapter title again is?
I better have a look. The chapter title is Keeping Your Love Alive.
Okay.
So caring for your relationship. Alive is a good word.
Yeah, and so in keeping our love alive, I understand there needs to be intentionality, and the first thing we started talking about was rituals. And what Bev and I have realized about ourselves is we are anti-ritual, right? So we almost, like, when people do things ritualistic, we sort of have sometimes an internal and sometimes it's an external eye roll. Like, we sort of, you know, put our finger down our throat and go, oh my goodness, that's so lame, or, oh, they, you know, they're only doing that because it's a ritual, or I don't know, whatever. And so we actually, before the separation, we didn't say goodnight. We didn't say good morning.
Oh.
Weird.
Okay.
Okay. But now, and we weren't going to bed at the same time. Now I just said to her, I'm really actually enjoying going to bed at the same time. Before, it felt like there was an expectation. Okay, it's time to go to bed. Come here, little boy. Come on, it's bedtime. And I just flashed back to my mom telling me to go to bed, right? So I'd like stay up and waste all sorts of time watching stupid stuff on television or whatever. Bev would go to bed. Well, now going to bed with my wife at the same time is awesome. And it forces, not forces, not the right word. Then
it
when
invites.
That's a much better word. It invites the ritual of good night, and it's a beautiful way to end the day. And just recognizing that in our 50s, how lame is that? That it's taken this long for us to recognize that.
Well, I think you're saying something really interesting. See, because what all the stuff in attachment science, all these studies of attachment, what they tell us, which I was thinking about it yesterday, it sounds so simple, but in fact, it's really profound. What they tell us is the key moments in a relationship that define the safety of that relationship. And if you think about that, attachment and bonding is all about connection and our need to feel that this connection is okay and solid and alive, key moments of separation and reunion, that's when these emotions come alive. You know, it's like we separate in life. We go to work, we have our day, we go to sleep, And it's like somehow these moments, when I look at the couples that I've worked with over the years, this is the time of separation, saying goodbye. Bye, honey. I'll see you tonight. I'll be back at 5. You know, it's right. That's important. Not just walking out the house like the other person doesn't exist. Like, I'm off, right? Like, who are you? You know, like, you recognize the relationship. Bye, honey. I'll see you tonight. It's like saying, I'll be back. And then when you come in the house, reunion, you know, I can remember realizing, especially when we had 2 little kids, you know, I wrote the book and, you know, my husband would come home and I would launch into, did you get that? Have you got that? And we've got to, and by the way, and did you call out Timmy's teacher? And I realized, wait a minute. You know, I'm losing the knack of just turning and saying, hi, you know, nice to see you. Give me a hug. How was your day? You know, which is recognizing each other and saying to each other, in fact, on an almost a nonverbal level, there you are. Now you're important to me. I see you. We have an important relationship. So reunions and separations are key moments for tiny little rituals, and going to bed together is great. And, you know, saying good night to each other, you know, they're little mini separations, right? Saying hi in the morning, you know, I know that when I'm away working, like I was last week, having John call, he doesn't really have to say anything, you know, and the call doesn't have to be long, you know, just tells me what weather's like at home and, you know, whatever, right? And, you know, we've got this going next week. But it's the fact he's called, you know, the fact that I'm away from him and he makes the effort to call and connect with me and then says, you know, don't work too hard, take care of you, see you soon. I mean, these things are really important emotional markers for people. They say, there's my relationship. I can reach out and touch it. I matter to this person. There they are. I'll separate from them. And when I separate, you know, I say goodnight or goodbye. And I recognize that they're important. And it doesn't sound like it matters, but it really is. And I notice that when couples start to change their relationship in therapy, they start doing this naturally. Well, you know, this is an education program. We're saying to people, raise your awareness here, guys. Raise your awareness. By the way, it matters with kids too. You know, and we do it more naturally with kids and even with our dogs. You know, I walk in the house, you know, my dog's delighted to see me and I go, oh, hi. You know, I was realizing the other day, I spend more time saying hi to my dog than I do when my husband comes home.
But hold on, but honestly, if I came home and Bev jumped on me and wiggled her butt, I'd be all over that.
Well, that's not necessarily what I'm talking about, but you guys can sort out whether that's your favorite way of saying hi. You know, maybe, you know, maybe she'd like, you know, she'd like to tell you what you'd like her to do. Maybe you have a very sexy, left eyebrow lift or something, you know, that she would be, yes, like that. She has to, no, not so much. You know,
you know, a little creepy.
Yeah, maybe that would be kind of what she would pick up on, right? But it's important, you know, it's like recognizing that the person exists for you and is in your mind and matters to you. That's, in the end, that's what secure attachment is. I know that I'm in your mind, that you have me in mind, that I matter to you, and you know the same thing. Well, how do I know that? You know, you call me up, you call me by a special name, you bring me tea in the morning, you say hi to me, we have a special way of hugging when I come home. These things would be very small. I remember one couple I worked with years ago where he would make her cocoa. At 9:30, she had been through terrible life history, terrible. So she needed things predictable. So it was a real touchstone for her that he would care. He knew that, and he would be consistent. At 9:30 every night, he would bring her a cocoa. and they would sit on the couch if they were feeling very close, or they would sit in two chairs if she needed separateness that day, right? This meant a huge amount. This was like a point of safety in her day. This was like a predictable place that she knew it was going to happen. She knew that he was available to her in that moment. She knew that he cared enough that he'd always do that. I mean, in this woman's dangerous, chaotic life, this was like a lifesaver, knowing that she would always have this moment. And it sounds so corny. It sounds like, you know, who cares, you know, whether he makes you cocoa or not. Well, it was a big deal. And this is one of the rituals they came up with, and it meant the world to her. It gave her a sense of security. She always knew that this was going to happen, right? No matter what kind of bad day she'd been having, what ghosts had come out of her closet, she always knew that he was going to come to her at 9:30 and seek her out and be there for her and invite her. And they were going to have these moments of connection. And sometimes they just talked about the weather, but it's important. Having these little rituals are important.
Well, I'm still not convinced that we're going to be overly ritualistic.
But just one or two will do.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think what's key that you said earlier, Sue, for at least for my brain, is it doesn't always have to be the big ta-da, the big Hallmark moment, the big. And see that my brain goes into that. Like one time, Bev came home. This is before separation. And I had all the fancy meal set out, and it was quite a lovely thing. I didn't tell her it was takeout, and then I put it into the bowls in the kitchen, made it look like I made it, but that was later. And I was sitting at the table, and I had a Three Stooges apron on, barbecue apron, and nothing else underneath it, nothing. And I had a flower in my mouth, and really the only thing that kind of came out of that conversation was she complained there wasn't enough Caesar salad dressing on the salad. And I was like, are you kidding me? Remember that?
Yes.
So my brain tends to go into the...
That was sort of when you weren't tuned into each other.
Oh, no.
No. No. She was sitting there going, what are you doing? I'm so not into you. Why are you even bothering? Why are you even trying? You know, and I'm thinking a big, grandiose, you know, fun, goofy, over-the-top thing every once in the blue moon will get me through, rather than a little consistency with the little things anyway.
Right, right. So, you know, part of this conversation, this conversation is all about looking at your journey, recognizing what you've learned, and figuring out how to take these things forward, right? Because in EFT, emotionally focused couples therapy, which is what the Holby Type program is based on, I think we're the only approach to couples therapy that has ever found the kind of results we have for follow-up. You know, it's hard to go more than 3 years follow-up because couples don't want to do the questionnaires, you know, and you can't even find some of them after 3 years. But at 3 years follow-up, we have great results, that our results stay, right? So that's interesting, and it matters. And so this conversation is about keeping this going and not just doing it and then putting the book down and letting dust go on it, but, you know, keeping this awareness in your relationship, right? Taking what you've learned and using it, taking it, flowing it forward, right?
It's got to be, to me, and I said this, I think I've said something, by the way, I know I'm talking a lot, but I also know that Bev, when she talks, she coughs, so.
Right, that's okay.
I've already had feedback, people saying, dude, shut up, let Bev talk, but, oh crap, what was I saying? Oh, so the ultimate question mark in all of this couple marriage relationship help stuff is, when you're doing it, it's gold. But then you put the book down and you got to live it. And but living it is hard unless there's a game plan. And it's similar to working out at the gym. If you're just going to go in and flop around for a little bit, you're going to get no results. So But back to this ritual thing, Sue, we don't do things regularly. We don't do ritualistic stuff in any aspect of our life.
You do. You just told me that you started going to bed together and that you liked it and that you went to bed together at the same time and that you're liking it and it's important. And
one thing.
Hey, but that one's a big one. Look at that one. Because you ending your day, you're taking the awareness and the trouble to end your day in a way that you feel connected at the end of the day. That's really important. Mm-hmm. Those are the moments that matter, separation and reunion. That's when you either recognize the relationship or you don't. You just take the relationship for granted. You make it an incidental. When you recognize the relationship, you know, you're giving the message to your partner, this is an essential relationship for me. It's not incidental. You matter to me. And that is very powerful on an emotional level, right?
Okay. So aside from creating some rituals, what are some other things in this final chapter that we need to wrap our head around before we move on?
What I suggest in the exercises in this chapter is I talk about, coming up with and sharing moments and discussing moments in the relationship. It could be during that you've had during the hold me tight conversations, but generally moments in the relationship that really matter to you and sharing them with your partner. You know, they're kind of memory points that sort of point out your journey. Like I'm sure maybe twice a year, three times a year, I bring up our first kiss to my husband. You know, I'll bring it up in a joke, I'll bring it up but that first kiss blew my mind, okay? and the memory still blows my mind because it was a wonderful kiss, okay? It was like, we were both terrified. We talked on the phone for 3.5 months and the conversations have got ridiculous. My phone bill was becoming astronomical. The conversations would start at 5 o'clock and by the time we were thinking about actually meeting more, they were like 4 hours long. It was ridiculous. But then we actually met. I went out to visit him. Well, that's different. It was okay talking to a dude on the phone, but then you're actually going to meet him, like, So he met me at the airport and we went down to a market in Vancouver to buy some food and some flowers. And we stopped the car to park, you know, and I'm still like pretty guarded, you know, I'm making sort of fun conversation. And he stops the car and he sits there. And so I'm like, okay, you know, let's make fun conversations, you know. And he just turns towards me and I'm like, and then very, very slowly he comes towards me. It gives me this big kiss and I was sort of like, oh, this is interesting.
A lot of opera happening during this kiss.
Yes. But I remember it was really important. And so I bring it up and we talk about it and we laugh. You know, you remember these moments. You know, he remembers the moment when he came home to me and said, you know, we were trying to adopt a baby, which was pretty impossible in Canada at that time. And he came home from a doctor's appointment and he walks in the house very nonchalant. We'd only been together, we'd only been married about 10 months, okay? And I was getting pretty despairing over the whole process. And he walked in the house and he says, hi. I said, hi. And he said, guess what? I said, I don't know what. He said, I found us a baby. There's a baby that my doctor, this baby needs a family and he's going to be born, da 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 da, and I think it's going to work and we're going to have a son. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? This is, and all through our marriage, actually, he's done that kind of thing. He's very active in his personality. So, you know, he'll listen to my dreams and things, and then he'll show up and say, oh, yeah, you know, I fixed it so that'll happen. And I'm like, what? what do you I'm not used to this. I'm used to, I have to do everything, you know, that was right. And this blows me away that another person would come and kind of listen to my needs and actually go out there in the universe and then do something to make it happen. You know, he talked to the doctor about it and he talked to him for an hour. And the doctor actually said, well, you know, you're talking to me about this so much. I actually have been thinking, I have this patient who came in yesterday and I like you so much from the things you've said. How about I try to set this up, right? Well, so he talks about that. So there's times in your history when you've done things for each other or you've gone through something that matters to both of you. And, you know, I notice with happy couples that they touch on those things. They remind each other. And it's like, you know, touching on important bits of your history that matter, right? And they can be good times or they can be bad times that you've come through. You know, like, do you remember the huge fight we had? You know, and then afterwards we just laughed all the way home in the car. You know, but actually in the, you know, when I was in the theater, I told you, I'm going to leave you. You know, you can live alone forever because you're a creep.
Wow. Is there another story you want to share, Sue?
Oh, whatever. And then, you know, and then by the time you're coming home, you're laughing. So you can, those moments are important, you know, and this is, the other thing that I talk to people about here, which I think is even more important than those two things that we've talked about, rituals and thinking about and sharing moments along your journey, is coming up with a resilient relationship story together, which is you guys, this is important for you guys. And you're doing it naturally. You've done it with me a bit in this program, you know, coming up with saying, okay, what happened to us? Well, you know, we got married in a particular way with particular pressures, right? And we didn't know how to do it. And then what happened to us? We got stuck in some pretty bad dances and, you know, we didn't know how to listen to each other and tune into each other. And we nearly lost each other, right? I mean, and then what happened? The resilient story is, how did you guys find the courage and the commitment to turn back towards each other and walk back towards each other and look at the relationship? Look at what you did. You even decided to do this program, right? So the resilient relationship story is, how did we get stuck and lose each other? And then what have we done here? How have we put this relationship back on track? It's very important that people talk about that.
In a way, that sounds similar to vision casting. You know, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not a big believer in the whole if you think it, it'll happen stuff.
No, but, that's a bit superficial.
But if you can get your mind focused on the right things and the right direction, then you can begin to imagine the possibilities of what something may look like. You're creating the possibility of a new future for you just simply by putting words on it and recognizing, you know, a little attaboy, where we've come from, and then where do we want to go? What's that saying? If you don't make any goals, you'll be sure never to hit them.
Well, you're hitting another one now. I ask people to do a resilient relationship story, which is, how did we save our relationship together? You know, what did you do that helped me come close again? What did I do that helped you come close again? Were there key moments where we took risks? How did we do it? How did we save and you know, take care of our relationship? And then the second one is a future story, which is a future vision, which is, where do we want our relationship to be in 5 years? You know, how do we want to feel about each other? What do we want to be doing together, right? What, you know, and I think both of those are really important.
Okay. Can you please say something? I just feel like I'm talking way too much. Is there anything you want to say?
That's probably what we've talked about the most as far as, you know, what does the future look like? And we're both very aware that time goes quickly and we're very busy. And if you're not intentional, if you don't talk about things and you don't make a plan or you don't have some goals or being intentional about, you know, dating each other. It's, you know, it's a very busy season for me. So, you know, and then, you know, we got lost these last couple of weeks because we've been so busy doing stuff because of the season that we really haven't made the time to connect other than we've been out Friday night.
Oh, wait, I got to tell you, we went out for the first time as a couple since getting back together in the town, small town that we live in, because they had a blues jazz fest thing. And we walked across the street holding hands. Now, that might sound normal to a lot of people, but Bev has always had a PDA, a fear of PDA, right? Public displays of affection has never been her thing at all. And I've always been kind of sucky about that. But we walked holding hands together in the town where everyone knows us. And I was walking around like a peacock. Like, oh, so anyway, I was happy.
Well, you see, that's what I mean by something very small that recognizes the relationship, right?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. You know, and it can be small, but it can be really important. You know, it's like, look what it means to you that she holds your hand when you cross the street. We can say, oh, that shouldn't mean anything. But it does. These are the small things that matter to us because they say, you're mine. We belong together. You're my special one. I recognize you. And in public, it's like, in public, I'm saying, you're my special one. You know, I'm very aware when I go and speak at conferences and my husband comes to help me pick up my stuff from the conference. I've just given a talk. I'm very aware that he reaches out his hand, and when I come off the stage, he holds my hand and we walk through the audience. And I actually feel kind of shy about it. You know, it's like, because I've stood up there and given this speech, and now he does this, you know, and I mean, now I'm not the presenter, I'm just Sue, and he's holding, so I hold his hand and we walk out together, and there's something public about it, you know, about saying, yes, I'm an expert on this topic, but I'm not. I'm just this man's wife, you know, and so when he reaches his hand for me, I hold his hand, right?
Can you help us? Can you give us some examples of goal setting when it comes to the marriage stuff? Because as much as I cognitively am very aware that it's important, I still don't know how to do it.
Well, I think you can do it on different levels. You can do it on a level of dreaming together. You know, I've sat with couples, and couples will say, you know, in 5 years time, I want to be retired and I want you to be spending more time with me. And ideally, I would like us to live in this small town, and I would like us to garden together, and I'd like us to travel together. And my dream is that when I'm this age, you know, we'll be on a beach in Costa Rica, and, you know, you'll turn to me and you'll say, right? And so if that's kind of a general dream for the future of where we're going, but it can be much more specific. You know, it can be much more specific. It can be like, I've got a birthday coming up in 2 months' time, and I want just you and me. We usually have a big family thing on my birthday. I don't want a big family thing. I want you and me to go out, and I want you and me to talk about, you know, how we feel together and what's happening in our lives and what we want the next year to be like, you know, or what we want what we're going to do to keep our relationship safe and alive. You know, I think it's got to be more emotional and more genuine and more improvised than, you know, there are some relationship skill programs that do things like make a regular date, you know, have a date once every 2 weeks, and that's a bit too mechanical, I think.
Yes, I agree.
You know, it doesn't really, it just becomes one more thing you've got to do, you know, and then you sort of resent it and forget it. And this is more like, you know, saying there's something I really would love to see, or there's something I'd like us to do, and it can be next week, or it can be a regular thing, or it can be a distant thing like 5 years time or 10 years time. Mm. You know, I can remember saying to my husband, I really like it. Hey, I'm hooked on bringing tea in the morning. That's because I'm English. English people don't stop breathing till they've drunk tea, okay? So you know, but I remember saying to my husband a few months ago, do you remember that you used to bring me tea in the morning and they used to sit on the bed and you used to talk to me about what we were going to do with our day? And he said, yes, I remember that. He said, well, do you notice how it's changed? Now you bring me tea and we're both like, you know, into our day already. And so we're not really, you bring me tea and then you leave and, you know, I'm in my day sort of thing. And I said, let's go back to the way it was before. You know, what I'd like to do is, you know, I'd like you to just sit on the bed and talk to me for a bit. Right. And so I said, so, you know, in a month's time, I'd like us to be able to look back and say, hey, we had some nice conversations in the morning. You know, about nothing. You know, about what are you looking forward to in your day? What are you worried about in your day? Or, you know, how can I help you with your day? Those kinds of things. Or, but then you start off the day with a sense of connection. That's the point. Paying attention to the connection is really what I'm asking people to do.
Yeah, that's very well said, obviously. There were some points in the final chapter, and one point I kind of tweaked on it was, now this might not be the same stuff that we're talking about, but it's still in the final chapter, and it was a point, and I remember points. So here's the point. The point was maybe sign up for a course or do something that wouldn't normally do together, like signing up for, you know, whatever. And so I said to Bev, let's do ballroom dancing or salsa dancing. Right?
Sorry.
See, it's still choking her up.
Right. Well done, Bev, for even being here with a bad cold.
Yeah, seriously. And me too, because I usually avoid sick people like crazy. I don't want to be anywhere near her. Anyway, and she's like, no, I don't want to do that. I said, how come? I don't. And she said before, like a few times, I don't want to do that. And finally, she admitted the truth. And here's the truth. Because all I can imagine is you being a smart ass with a group of people, you know, being the class clown and us doing embarrassing things and it turning into the Drew show. And I don't want that. And so to me, that was a breakthrough for us, for her to be able to communicate that. And then for me to be able to say, all right, if I pinky swear that the only person I'm going to be a smart ass with is you, what do you think? By the way, what do you think?
Ballroom maybe, not salsa.
Ballroom maybe. Okay.
But you know, it's very interesting that you talk about dancing. And of course, I dance Argentine tango, so it speaks to me. And when I first started Argentine tango, I danced with my husband. But then he said, this is too hard, I don't want to do it. Which is like, oh, you've got to be kidding. I'm absolutely hooked on it. So that was a bit tricky. But dancing is a really key one, because somebody's calling me, I'm going to ignore them. You know, dancing is like you're tuning into somebody, you're moving with somebody, you're sharing something, you're reading somebody's intention. I mean, it's a real good image of what you do in a good relationship on a emotional level, but it's physical. If you're really going to dance with someone, some people dance with you and they're in their head figuring out the next step, and there's no, you don't, it's like, it's boring. Okay, it's boring. But then somebody else can dance with you. They don't know many steps, but they're completely with you. They're tuned in and you can feel that, and you start to play with the music, and it's a beautiful thing. It's something that our brain, our bonding brain, looks for and likes and wants, and you know. So I think dancing is a beautiful thing, but finding anything that you can really share, you know, finding anything that I don't like hiking and my husband likes hiking, but so, you know, it means a lot to me when he says, I found this hike and even you'll like it. So he's gone to the trouble of looking at his book for a hike that Sue will like, meaning it's not straight uphill.
Yeah.
And there's not lots of up and it's level, right? And it's pretty and it's not challenging and it's not too long.
So in other words, he found the local golf course.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, he says, I found this hike for you so that we can go hiking. You know, that touches me because he's gone to the trouble of looking through all the hikes, right? And finding one that he thinks that I would enjoy and then we can do it together, right? So, or we build something in the garden together. You know, finding something that you can share, you can build, you can learn together. I mean, this is all good stuff. We do it when we're courting. We seek out activities or things to do together. We seek it out. And then as we, you know, as a relationship becomes kind of more front, less front and center, we stop doing that. You know, the point is here, a relationship is alive like a plant. It doesn't matter how good it is in the beginning. If you don't water, a plant can be full and flourishing in the beginning. If you don't water it and feed it, it just starts to shrivel. And why would we think any differently of our relationships? And we do. I think actually we take them, our lives get so busy. Life is so demanding. We kind of just take them for granted a lot until something goes wrong. Right. And then we're in pain. And then we get super aware. But I'm really saying your relationships are an enormously important and significant part of your life and who you are. If you take the time to go to the gym 3 times a week, and if you take the time to think about what you eat, hey, the quality of your intimate relationship is actually more important than those things in terms of your health and well-being and happiness. You need to at least pay, you know, as much attention as you do to go into the gym and, you know, what you eat. And, you know, this is, and this isn't sentimentality. We know from the research that in the end, the quality of your most intimate relationships are pretty much the best predictor of your happiness, your health, your physical health, your mental health. It's important here, right? Not to just take them for granted.
Is there anything that you want to say to us, Bev and Drew, as we move on towards the rest of our lives together that ties in with this last chapter? Because you now know a little bit about us. So just specifically, like so far we've tried to keep things pretty general with a little bit of situational stuff, but we want this video series to be able to apply to everybody. But now I want it to be about us, just about us. So everyone else can go away. If you were to kick us in the butt or give us a shoulder, no, kick in the butt. What do you want to say to us?
If I was going to kick you in the butt, I'd want to say, don't forget, guys, that you lost each other. Don't forget that feeling that you lost each other. And let that feeling remind you how precious you are to each other. And keep growing your relationship. Don't assume it's fine now. Keep growing it. Keep growing it, right? So don't forget, if I was going to kick you on the butt, if I was going to do the opposite, I'd say, I think you're awesome. I think you're awesome on lots of levels. You're awesome in what you've done and the courage it must have taken and the openness to risk again and to connect with each other. And I think you're doubly awesome in being willing to share the story because this is what people need. We need, you know, our stories about love are ridiculous. As I said before, you know, Romeo and Juliet is not a love story. It's a story of infatuation between a 13-year-old and a 17-year-old that lasts 6 days where everybody dies. I mean, it's a stupid story, actually. But, you know, we need love stories like yours. We need love stories out there in society available for people where people can say, oh, hey, remember that couple? Remember them? They got lost and they lost each other. And hey, they turned back towards each other, and they took risks, and they went to learn about their relationship. And then I remember them, and they bonded in a new way, in a way that they maybe couldn't have done before. Remember them. So many of us don't have these stories. We don't. So we just look at the media that says things like, our relationships are impossible anyway, you know. So I think you're awesome, not only to have done it at all, because it really takes courage to walk back into a place where you've been hurt and got lost. It really does. I think you're doubly awesome to be willing to share this with people. You know, that's, and that's why I said yes, basically. I mean, when you first said it to me, I thought, oh no, I don't want to do that. And then as you kept talking, I thought, well, why not? This is the kind of thing that we need to do. We need to be open and tell people where we got stuck in relationships and what we did and how we found a way through. And then people will start believing in connection again and working for it. And that's what my work's all about. I mean, that's what the last 35 years has been for me. Having people believe in connection, believe that romantic love's possible, know how to believe they can create it, know how to create it. And I think in some ways, who can say why I got so passionate? I mean, I know one reason was that I might have said before, I can't remember, is that it was clear to me when I was growing up, I was an only child. It was clear to me that my parents loved each other. And it was also completely clear to me that they were messing it up. Right, they were spectacularly messing it up from my childhood until I was about 11 when they split up. And the thing about that one was that my father, who was totally dear to me, never recovered from that. He never recovered from the fact that he lost my mother, never. And so I think that had a lot to do with it, you know. But I think, this is what we need to do now in our society. Never mind going to the moon. The moon's nice, yeah. You know, go to the moon, you know, whatever, right? But, like, excuse me, we need to understand the human heart. We need to understand. We understand more about our children now. We give them more attention. We understand their needs better. Parenting's changing. We need to understand romantic love and the enormous part it plays in people's lives. We need to understand our needs, and you guys doing what you're doing, that speaks to people. That, you know, that isn't, that just speaks to people. So I think you're pretty awesome, basically.
Thanks. Well, everyone knows we think you're awesome because we just drank wine to you at the start of this whole thing. But it is amazing to me how we can go from, you know, it would be easier if he was just killed in a car accident because we wouldn't have to do the divorce thing and have that shame in the tribe that we grew up in. Like, how nuts is that? So to go from that thinking to, if you died in a car accident now, I'm not sure how I would ever recover from that.
Right.
You know, those two are painful extremes.
Yes.
And there's a part of me that I just have to remind myself, dude, look where you are now. Remember where you were, and now look where you are. Pull your head out of your orifice and be grateful. Like, it's just, there's these little consistent attitude, perspective tweaks that I need to just grab a hold of every stinking day.
Yes. And I think I really believe that that's an important part of growth. And it can sound corny, but, you know, what we do in our therapy with people, no matter who we're seeing, whether we're seeing a family, an individual, or a couple, what I talk about is people have to have moments of success in every session. Never mind, you know, going home and doing their homework and finding out that they've improved 3 months' time. That's useless. They've got to have moments of success in every session. And celebrating those moments, it keeps you on track. So saying, wow, look at where we were. Isn't it amazing? Look at where we are now. That's amazing. And saying that to yourself every day is like it's a celebration, but it also grounds you. It says, this is what is possible. And of course we'll fight again. And of course we'll hurt each other again. Of course we will, because we're human beings.
Yeah.
But look at what we've done. Look at what we can do. You can make sense of relationships. I can do this. I can deal with my hurt in a way that has me turn towards my partner instead of away. We can take risks with each other. Look at what we can do. That's important to hold on to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's what keeps people moving forward. And
just, I think a final analogy that keeps coming into my brain is the analogy of driving. So if you focus while you're driving on the rearview mirror the whole time, you're going to smash up somewhere. You're going to hit something, smash. And if you don't check your rearview mirror every once in a while to see where you've come from or see what's coming up behind you, you know, that kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure how the analogy goes with the mirrors and the windows and everything, but I know that it makes sense to somebody out there. So I'm glad I shared that.
Well, apart from anything else, this has been fun. And I think that's the other thing, you know, working on your relationship. Yeah, it's a bit risky sometimes, but it can be fun and stimulating. And, you know, when I do therapy with people, I have fun. And when I do hold me tight groups, we have a ball. You know, it can be, it's enlivening. We're talking about essentially who we are as human beings and what makes us tick and what we long for and what terrifies us. You know, this is enlivening. This is the real drama rather than Game of Thrones or what's on Netflix, you know. I keep getting these things, but we know you'd like this on Netflix. No, I wouldn't. because I'm sitting with couples and I see really powerful emotional dramas all the time, man. Like, I don't want to see your phony, you know, who killed who and what, who cares. But yeah, it's important to keep that sense of, you know, where are we? How far have we come? And every day to say, look at what we've done. Look at what we can do. Look at what we've done. I hope you feel that way too, Bev. Do you?
I do, for sure. Yeah.
Is there anything you want to add just before we say goodbye?
So you can go into another story.
No, I'm not. No more stories.
No, it's been great. And you're right. You have to take those looks at your relationship and look back at where we've come and give yourself a pat in the back and cut yourself some slack when you go through a tough time. Go, whoa, we can get through this.
Yeah.
That's right. Remembering the good times. And that's exactly right. Then when the bad times happen, you say, we can get through this. They're not catastrophes. They're just bad moments.
Yeah.
Right? We can get through this because we know how to do it. We've done it before. That gives you a faith in your relationship. I mean, that faith in your relationship is crucial, right? It keeps you focused, right?
Yeah. And just actually that on that grace part, practicing, this is something I learned not too long ago from a friend, practicing compassionate, non-judgmental self-awareness is part of, I believe, the Kripalu world, the yoga world. I'm not sure, but it's a good saying, compassionate, non-judgmental self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, cutting yourself a bit of slack, stay aware. Don't just go through and go, oh yeah, I screwed up, but you know, you just need to accept me because I'm me and you know, that kind of crap. No, be compassionate and non-judgmental, but be self-aware in that whole process, or the,
right,
you know, the other way around. And I said to Bev this afternoon, when I don't like myself, that's when I don't like you. It's got nothing to do with you. So me practicing compassionate, non-judgmental self-awareness will help me like me, and then I like you, and then you like me, and it's just one big Hallmark movie after that.
Yeah, but if I'm in a space where I don't like me, for one thing, I don't want you to see me. And, you know, what's that phrase? I think it was a bonding theorist who said it. I think it was an English guy called Winnicott. He said, we all like to be able to hide, to protect ourselves, but it's a tragedy not to be found, right? There's a lot of us that go through life like that, and we don't even know. We don't even know that that's the dance that's doing us. So it's been fun, guys.
Yeah.
And thank you for trusting me enough to do this with me. And I hope it speaks to a lot of the folks out there. So thank you for doing it with me.
Thank you again. And so Dr. Sue Johnson, of course, that's who we've been chatting with. That's, if you haven't figured it out by now at the final video part with Sue, then maybe you're just tuning in halfway through the series. I don't know. But of course, Hold Me Tight is the name of the book, and it's also the name of the program. And if you're interested in signing up for the program yourself, the online stuff, the videos on there are phenomenal. There's fun ones, there's short ones, there's longer ones, there's Sue, there's other people. It's an incredible program. And instead of paying, you know, you can go ahead and pay some shrink to walk you through the Hold Me Tight stuff, but that's a ton of coin. If you want to do this program as a couple, try it out yourself and see how that works. See how that fits. It's way more affordable. And then maybe you want to, get to some counselor or something like that. Anyway, go to drewmarshall.ca. It's my website. My radio show will be ending in just a few weeks. And this is the perfect way to end. With Sue helping Bev and I not screw up again. So thank you, Sue. And as we normally say, we'll come back here next week. We'll pick it up here next week at the Higher Ground Cafe. Well, we won't be here next week at the Higher Ground Cafe. You're more than welcome to come. It's Bev's Cafe. It's in Bell Fountain, Ontario. Come on in. It's a great cafe. But next week on the show, Bev will be in studio live, and we're going to talk about where things are really at without Sue. So it'll just be honesty. Thank you, Sue.
I'm jolly good.